Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios. It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Frazier straight ahead and straight in. Oh, it's great in eighth. Georgia wins it.
That, of course, the sounds of the winning play in that eight overtime saga that we had last Friday between Georgia and Georgia Tech, setting the tone for rivalry weekend. And what a weekend it was, on the field, after the games on the field. Lots of stuff to talk about from rivalry weekend. And let's go ahead and just go ahead and dive right into it. Of course, you are listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of today's show, you definitely can do that. It's easy to do. Just text or call us on our studio line, 850-623-1330. Again, that number, 850-623-1330. Georgia, again, this is one of those games where Georgia is lucky that they won this game, right? Much like the Kentucky game, really kind of even like the Florida game, because you could say that if DJ Lagway doesn't go out with that hamstring injury, Florida would have had an opportunity to maybe make a play late. They would have hung in there a little closer than what they did, had an opportunity late to make a play and win that game. So Georgia's had a lot of lucky breaks this season. But you know what? Sometimes to win a national championship, that is what you have to have, is lucky breaks. Now, they've also had a couple of games where you just kind of scratch your head and you go, what's going on? What's Kirby thinking there? What's Carson Beck thinking there? And this game started off like it was going to be one of those. I mean, Georgia Tech jumps out to a 17-0 lead in the first half, and then Georgia just starts chipping away, right? Surely and slowly over the rest of the game, they just kind of start chipping away at it, and brick by brick, piece by piece, climb back into this game and ultimately force overtime, and it goes into eight overtimes. And I love that it went into eight overtimes. As a matter of fact, Saturday night at the Ice Flyers game, I was talking to somebody who was – I was talking to a Michigan fan. She and I were talking about this game in particular and how it's funny that with eight overtime periods, the whole point of the two-point conversion back and forth, like you saw, like what is it, after the third – overtime period, you start doing the two-point conversions. No, it's after the second. After the second, you start doing the two-point conversion tries for a chance to win. And it's funny because NCAA adopted that after that A&M-LSU game that went seven overtimes, and everybody was like, oh, it's too long of a game. We can't have that. It's too much. We've got to do something to shorten it. So the NCAA says, okay, they'll play two regular overtime periods. Then after that, they'll have two-point conversion tries. They'll just swap in and out, almost essentially like a shootout in hockey, mentioning the Ice Flyer game. That's how they won Saturday night. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. But, yeah, essentially it kind of makes it like a shootout, right, where you have a chance, one play, get in the end zone. If you do, the other team's got to respond. If they don't, then the game's over and you win, right? And it went back and forth, all the way to eight overtimes. So, really – yes, the length is shorter because they're not as long of drives because you place the ball at the two-yard line. But do we really save anything in college football? Because we still got eight overtime, nine overtime periods. And honestly, with this format, one day may even see a 12 overtime period game just because of the way that this whole two-point conversion thing works. So I don't think we really solved anything as far as the overtime period goes. As far as the teams in this game, Georgia Tech, I mean, look, Georgia Tech's proven that they're a good football team, right? They beat Florida State in Dublin to start the year. They beat Miami for the second straight year a few weeks back. Knew that they were going to have an opportunity. If Haynes King could play a solid game in this game, which he did, you know, if he could have a solid game and they could find some success running the football, they would have an opportunity at winning this game. Austin Price and I sat here in this very same studio on Friday, and we talked about that. And that's exactly what you saw. Georgia Tech had a lot of early success, and they were able to build off of that And Georgia just was too good of a team, right? On paper, Georgia's the better team. And I think that's why we saw the Bulldogs battle back into this game. Plus, it helped that they were at home, so they did have the home crowd behind them, right? Had this game been in Atlanta, it might have been a different story. It could have gotten ugly if this game was in Atlanta, because I feel like, you know, the rambling wreck behind Georgia Tech and their home field would have just pushed them even further. But they were going against a very rowdy crowd there in Sanford Stadium. So I think being at home definitely played a big part in the reason why Georgia was able to come back in this game. But for me, I'm looking at Georgia right now. Georgia's into the SEC championship game, right? They've got the Ole Miss loss. They've got the Alabama loss. It's not really a bad resume. They're into the SEC championship game at 10-2. They're going to be taking on Texas, who's probably going to move up to being the number two team in the country when we get the new college football playoff ranking coming out tomorrow night after Ohio State's loss. So I think for Georgia, you just got to keep going. You got to keep playing. But I think one thing that if I'm Texas, I'm looking forward to is that for whatever reason, after Georgia beat Texas, there was a couple of instances early in the season where this happened. Obviously against Kentucky, they started kind of slow. Bama, they definitely started slow. But for the most part this season, and Clemson as well. So there was a couple of times during the first half of the season where they started slow. But for the most part, they kind of got going and went on to win the games the way that you would expect them to. But this back half of the season has just been sloppy for Georgia. And it's not just the slow starts. It's Carson Beck throwing the interceptions. It's, you know, the running game being non-existent in some games. So going into this game against Texas, if I'm the Longhorns, I'm looking at it going, our defense, the way we played against A&M on Saturday night, we are playing at the right level at the right time. We may actually have an opportunity to exact some revenge for what they came to Austin and did to us earlier in the season. And I think they're legitimately going to have a chance to. Because like we saw in this game, Georgia just – the slow start, the sloppy play, right? I don't know if this Georgia Bulldog team has what it takes to win a championship, right? Like, even when Nick Saban was at Alabama, you could tell if that Alabama team was winning a national championship or not, right? Like, you could tell the difference between the team that went on to just blow out Notre Dame in the BCS championship game and that same team that limped to a 9-3 finish on the year and ended up blowing out Michigan State. But still, it was a difference in the team, right? There wasn't that completeness that you normally would see from a team that was from Alabama with Nick Saban there that you would expect to go win a championship. And it's been kind of the same with Kirby Smart at Georgia, right? Just a completeness of the team, offense and defense, complementing each other equally. That hasn't been there for Georgia this year. So it is going to be very interesting to see what happens coming up in Atlanta for this game. It's the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Ole Miss, they hold off Mississippi State. Mississippi State made this close early on, much like they have through most of the season, right? Like they were pushing Florida early in that game. Florida ends up pulling away in the second half. They were pushing Texas all the way into the fourth quarter. Texas ended up pulling away in the fourth quarter. They were pushing Georgia through most of that game. Georgia ended up pulling away. Same here. Mississippi State putting pressure on Ole Miss early on, but Ole Miss ultimately ends up pulling away and winning this game. 26-14, the final of this one. Jackson Dart, his final home game as an Ole Miss Rebel, Land Shark, whatever they are now. 14 of 24, 143 yards and a touchdown. That's not going to help his Heisman numbers, especially when we talk about the Colorado game coming up in a second and you hear Shedeur Sanders' numbers and Travis Hunter's numbers. That's not going to help that Heisman candidacy for him. That is for sure. I will say this, Ole Miss, and we're going to talk about this a little later on because Lane Kiffin made a post on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and he was talking about why Ole Miss deserves to be in the playoff over Alabama, and that is definitely going to be an interesting conversation that we are going to have. That is going to be coming up in segment three of today's show, so probably right around 9:40 is when we will talk about that, 940, 945, somewhere around in there. But as far as this game goes, Ole Miss, 9-3, they're kind of sitting there waiting their fate, right? Are they going to be a team that maybe jumps into that back spot of that college football playoff and gets in, or are they going to be going to a different bowl game? And then honestly and truthfully, if they're going to a different bowl game, how does that affect who sits out, who stays in, who decides to opt out, and who decides to keep playing, right? Mississippi State, on the other hand, I got to tell you what, next year's going to be year two in Jeff Leiby. The biggest jump for a team with a new head coach is between year one and year two. All those things I just mentioned a moment ago where they were able to keep it close against bigger and better teams, but ultimately ended up losing because they just couldn't sustain it. Give this man another offseason to build this team, to bring in some guys from the transfer portal, to bring in recruits from a recruiting class. I'm excited to see what Mississippi State could be next year in 2025 with Jeff Leiby back as their head coach. Colorado takes care of business against Oklahoma State, 52-0, the final in that one there on senior day for the Buffs. Shedeur Sanders, like I mentioned a moment ago, Jackson Dart didn't help his Heisman chances. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter both did their best job of pushing him further down as well. Shedeur Sanders, 34-41 for 438 yards and five touchdowns. Travis Hunter, 10 catches, 116 yards, three touchdowns. If you are filling out a Heisman Trophy ballot and you don't have these guys at one and two, I'm not going to tell you who to have at one and who to have at two, but I'm definitely going to tell you it should be one and two for these two guys. You're doing your Heisman ballot wrong if that's the case. If you have somebody else, if you have, and no disrespect to Cam Ward, no disrespect to Jenty at Boise State, no disrespect to either one of them, but if you do not have Travis Hunter or Shedeur Sanders at one and then the other one at two, your Heisman ballot is definitely wrong. We got to talk about Mike Gundy now after this loss. Oklahoma State just gets blanked by Colorado. Mike Gundy, he's got to be on the hot seat. It is superior mediocrity is what I'm going to call Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State, because it's mediocre. When you break it down, you break it down and look at championships won, bowl games. It is very mediocre, but it's high-level mediocre. It's superior mediocrity. It is almost 20 seasons as the head coach of the Cowboys, 169-88 overall. That's a good overall record, right? 12-6 in bowl games. That's a good bowl record, right? Only one Big 12 conference championship to show for it, though. Right? He's gotten to the dance a couple of different times, but just could not get the job done all but once. And the thing about Gundy is that he'll have, and we talked about this on Friday, Austin and I did, is that he'll have a 10-2, 11-1 season, and then he'll follow that up with two 6-6 seasons. Although this year they finished, I think, 3-9. There's just no consistency with Mike Gundy as the head coach at Oklahoma State. I think they got to start trying to maybe think about going a different direction, right? I don't know if he's the guy that they can lean on anymore and that they can trust to be the head coach of that program. 3-9 is not a good record. I understand they had injuries, but they also still had a good bit of talent on that team. I mean, I was one of the people that was high on them going into the season and picked them to be a dark horse to win the Big 12 title and possibly be a playoff team. And it looked like that was going to be the case. Started off 3-0 and then lose every game the rest of the season. Yeah. Mike Gundy, head coach of Oklahoma State, has got to be on the hot seat for sure. How about some other games from around the rivalry weekend? How about Alabama? They take care of business in the Iron Bowl, 28-14 to finish 9-3 on the season. This was kind of one of those interesting games. And I said on Friday I thought that Auburn would win this game or Alabama would blow them out. But this was just a weird game to watch, honestly and truthfully. I mean, Jalen Milroe, not a bad day at the office for him, 18-24, threw for 256 yards, no passing touchdowns, but he did have an interception. And Milroe, also on top of that passing day he had 106 rushing yards and three rushing touchdowns. So 21 of Bama's 28 points came from Jalen Milroe's legs. You never know what you're going to get with Jalen Milroe this year, honestly and truthfully. Is it going to be, LSU Jalen Milroe? Is it going to be Oklahoma Jalen Milroe? You know, and that was one of the talking points that we were discussing on Friday. Was not just what Jalen Milroe are we going to get, but what Peyton Thorne are we going to get as well? And I mean, Peyton Thorne did a decent job. 24-41, 301 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Wasn't a bad day for him. This was just one of those games where Alabama made more plays when they needed to than Auburn did. Simple, easy, that's it. That's what decided this game. When there was a time where you needed a third down conversion, Auburn didn't get the conversion, Alabama did. That's ultimately what decided this year's Iron Bowl. So Auburn, not going to make a bowl game this year. They're going to finish 5-7 on the year. They needed that win in Tuscaloosa to get to 6 wins. They're not going to get there, so they will just look to continue to grow and get better in the offseason. And I got to tell you what, not a bad recruiting class they're putting together there on the plane. So we'll see what Hugh Freeze has to offer in 2025 with the Auburn Tigers. It's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Just running through a couple of other scores as we are up against the break here. Tennessee takes care of Vandy in Nashville. Nino Ima. Liava, I know I said that name wrong. I apologize. I'm just going to stick with calling him Nino. I've been calling him Nino all year. I tried to get out of pocket and actually say his last name for rivalry weekend, and I messed it up. So we'll just stick with Nino. 18-26, 257 yards, and 4 passing touchdowns. Another slow start for Tennessee. Vandy jumped out to a 17-7 lead, but the second quarter started, and it was all Tennessee from there. Tennessee in the playoffs now. How about that? Nobody expected that, but Tennessee Volunteers in the college football playoffs as they get that win over Vandy. Vandy will now wait to see who they play in a bowl game. South Carolina, they knock off Clemson 17-14 in Clemson. Sellers is that kid's a beast, and it is going to be fun to watch him, and it's going to be fun to watch DJ Lagway pretty much dominate the SEC for the next couple of seasons, because that's what's going to happen. I'm telling you right now, Sellers and Lagway, that is going to be that next quarterback duo battle that you see happening in the SEC that is going to be must-watch television, because both of those quarterbacks are just freak athletes and just monsters. Some of the things they've done this season, some of the things they did on Saturday in their respected rivalry games, just absolutely incredible. Honestly, truthfully, things you shouldn't be able to do, but they did them. So I'm definitely looking forward to see Sellers continue to develop there in South Carolina with Shane Beamer as the head coach. Florida, they end FSU's miserable season. 31-11, the final score in that one. FSU finishes 2-10. Florida will finish 7-5. And look, after the first 3-4 weeks of the season, if you had told me Florida was going to finish 7-5, I would have laughed in your face and called you crazy. But the Gators somehow managed to rally behind Billy Napier and really get better. And honestly, I think the addition of DJ Lagway becoming the starting quarterback for them really gave this team a boost that I don't think a lot of people expected to happen. And this is a pretty good football team. Offensively, defensively, even on special teams, they're a pretty solid team. So they're going to be tough for whoever they line up against in a bowl game coming up over the next few weeks. That is for sure. Michigan upsets Ohio State 13-10 in that game. Ohio State just ample miss opportunities. Multiple field goals missed. Will Howard throwing interceptions in the red zone. You just can't have that if you're Ohio State in a game like this. And we'll actually, coming up, we will talk about both of these schools and both of these games, the Florida-Florida State game and the Michigan-Ohio State game, because they have something in common from Saturday. Not necessarily a good thing you want to have, but it happened. We're going to talk about it coming up a little later on in the glass half full. But right now, let's take our first time out. When we come back, we will shift gears and talk a little college football playoff. No, not teams, not matchups, but why I think the 12-team playoff is actually better for college football than the 4-team was.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
It's beginning to look a lot like
Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look at the 5 and 10. It's glistening once again.
Ah, yeah, sing it, Michael. I don't know, something about Michael Bublé Christmas music always puts me in the holiday spirit. What's going on? It's Jordan Glass. Welcome back in. It's in the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, 923 on this Monday morning, December 2nd. Hard to believe we are already in December. It's feeling like December outside. It's currently 49 here in Pensacola, so stay warm out there if you are out and about while you're listening. We definitely appreciate you doing that, by the way. If you want to be a part of the show, all you got to do is text or call 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. The 12-team playoff, I know when it was first announced, it wasn't the most popular thing. Everybody, and even still some people to this day, are like, oh, it's just a cash grab. They're just trying to, you know, go and make more money. It's more a chance for more advertisement, chance for them to pad their pockets a little bit more. And you're not wrong. I'm not going to sit here and say you're not wrong. But I think there was a lot of people that thought it was going to be bad for the sport and bad for college football. And I don't think that that's actually the case. I think it's actually been better than the 4-team playoff. Because, right, like when we had the 4-team playoff, you knew your 4 teams. Like right now, if we look at it, we know that even after this weekend, Oregon, number one. Texas, more than likely, number two. You've probably got Penn State at number three. And then number four, right behind them, you know, you'll have two or three teams that it could be. So we'd already know the field. Boom, we're set. If these guys win, they're in. That's how it works. That's how it was with 4 teams. Now with 12 teams, you know, there's been a lot more shifting and there's been a lot more changes happening because each week there's been games that have disrupted the order of the college football playoff rankings, right? I mean, you look at Florida, LSU and Ole Miss, they've knocked LSU and Ole Miss out of the college football playoff. Kansas knocked out Iowa State, BYU, and Colorado. Wiped out any opportunity they might have had. Each game this year has actually had a meaning to it, despite the 12-team playoff. And I think that was a worry and a fear heading into the season, was that these games weren't going to mean as much, right? Because, oh, you could lose one or two games, but then you could fall back and, you know, still pick up that 12th spot. And while, yes, to an extent, that is true, it has also given us the opportunity to where some of these teams get themselves in must-win situations to where every game for them, they have to be perfect. I think when you look at the landscape of college football with this 12-team playoff, we only have one undefeated team, and that's the Oregon Ducks. That's it. Everybody else has lost a game or lost more games. And the more that you lose, the more that margin for error gets smaller. And suddenly, the more those regular season games mean. Right? How many times did you hear while watching a game, this is an elimination game? You didn't get that in the BCS, really. You didn't get that in 4-team playoff. We knew who our 4 teams were going to be, right? It was always going to be Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, maybe Oklahoma. It was always going to be the same little cluster of teams that were fighting for those 4 spots. Now we open it up, and all of these teams behind them are starting to jockey and fight for position, and now we've got a situation of who's going to be in, who's going to be left out. Somebody is going to be left out of a spot that they feel like they should have been in, but it's because they lost a game. That's why they were left out. Or because they lost 2, or because they lost 3, in the sense of Alabama and Ole Miss. Both of those teams feel like they should still be in the college football playoff, despite losing 3 games. It's really, honestly and truthfully, to me, it's heightened the regular season. And now you look at conference championship weekend, right? Or actually, before we do that, look at rivalry weekend. And, of course, we're talking about how the 12-team playoff has impacted college football here on the Glass Half Full. If you want to be a part of today's show, you can do that, 850-623-1330. But look at how it affected rivalry weekend, right? Texas A&M and Texas, there was a spot on the SEC championship game on the line. It added to that rivalry game. South Carolina, Clemson. Look, had Miami not pulled an Amber Heard up north against Syracuse, Clemson would be out. They would not have an opportunity. But now you have a three-loss Clemson that if they find a way to beat SMU, I don't think they will, but if they find a way to beat SMU in the ACC championship game this upcoming weekend, they're in the college football playoff. And all of that shifts because these games matter, right? A game that wasn't even a rivalry game between Miami and Syracuse. It was just a, we have one more ACC matchup we need to play, so let's go ahead and work it in, and we'll send Miami up to Syracuse, and we'll play that game. Had no rivalry feel to it whatsoever. But everybody was watching that game because of the impact that it had on the college football playoff and the ACC championship game. So suddenly it had the attention of an Iron Bowl, of a Michigan-Ohio State, of a Florida-Florida State, of a South Carolina-Clemson, of a Georgia-Georgia Tech. It had that feel and that viewership because it mattered. Because people were tuning in and saying, holy cow, this game is actually going to matter quite a bit as far as the college football playoff and the conference championship picture goes. So we have not weakened college football at all in my mind with the 12-team playoff. If anything, we've made it better. And this is why I don't think we need to move past the 12-team. I think you need to leave it at 12-team. I know a lot of people are like, well, we're going to move to 16 teams. I think that's a mistake. Because when you move to 16 teams, yes, then there will be games that won't matter as much. But this 12-team, it's big enough to allow multiple teams into the college football playoff that necessarily wouldn't have gotten a look with a 4-team playoff. But it's also still small enough to where the sample size of what we get week in, week out is going to drastically change what can happen with the playoff rankings or the conference championship games. And then look what can happen in the conference championship games this weekend. Georgia loses, they're out of the playoffs. Clemson loses, they're out of the playoffs. There's a lot of teams that need to win to stay into the college football playoffs. Now you have teams like Oregon. I think, look, if Penn State beats Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, both are still getting in. Both are still getting in. If Georgia beats Texas, both are still getting in. But if Texas beats Georgia, then they're out. So there are a lot of implications that still are at play and up in the air as far as these playoff spots go. And I'm all for it. I'm a fan of the 12-team playoff, just in case you couldn't tell. I hope you are too. And if not, hey, voice your opinion. 850-623-1330. It's the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Before we head to break, I want to break this down real quick because it's something I've been itching to talk about the last couple of weeks. Which fan base in New York is in worse shape? Is it the New York Jets or the New York Giants? I have my opinion. I'm going to run down some of these things with the Jets and the Giants on the year. So for the Jets are actively, I will say this about the Jets, they are actively trying to get better, right? They are actively trying to get better. They fired Robert Saleh as the head coach because they realized it just wasn't working there. They changed play callers offensively. They fired their GM. They brought in Davante Adams, who has a relationship with Aaron Rodgers, to help the offense. They are trying to actually do things to win games. The only problem is that they get stuck in their own ways. They get stuck in the way that they want to do things, and that's not necessarily probably the best way to go about things. So while they're open to try to make the team a winner and trying to do some things that will help the team win, they're also getting in their own way. And that's what's hurting them in the Jets organization. So for the Jets, it's frustrating because they actually are actively trying to win and trying to get better, but they just can't seem to get out of their own way and do that. For the Giants, on the other hand, the Giants seem like they're going the opposite direction, right? You're still sticking with Brian Daboll. Honestly, I would have fired him about 2-3 weeks ago, but you're still sticking with him. You let players like Xavier McKinney, who leads the NFL in interceptions, and Saquon Barkley, we all see what he does with the Eagles each and every week. You just let them walk. Let them go to different teams. And in the situation with Saquon Barkley, you let him go to a division rival in the Philadelphia Eagles. That's not, it's not good game. It's not good game or good team management. You release Daniel Jones in the season. And it's not just a thing of they benched him for Tommy DeVito, but they actually didn't want him anywhere near the team, so they released him. Now on the Vikings practice squad, just kind of really waiting for an opportunity somewhere else where they need a starting quarterback. While the Jets are actively trying to make things better for them, they're just doing it in the wrong way. The Giants are just going, yeah, we don't care. Whatever. You're one of the best players on our team. Okay, fine. Go to a divisional rival. We don't care. We're not going to pay you the money you deserve or the money you want. And it's ridiculous. So in this question of who has got it worse when it comes to the fan bases in New York right now, is it the Jets or the Giants? It is by far the Giants. Because the Jets are frustrated, right? The Jets are frustrated, but they have to see that their organization is at least trying to make the team better. With the Giants, if I'm Giants fans, I'm just pissed off because there's nothing that they're doing. They're letting all the good players leave, and they're not attempting to try to bring any other good players in. They have created a culture that says, we're okay with losing games. We're okay with Saquon Barkley going to another team. And us having to play him twice a year, we're okay with that. That's just who we are now. If I'm a Giants fan, I am mad, big mad, at that front office and the way they're handling things. So if you ever wonder, or you ever hear anybody else talking about who has it worse in New York, Jets fans or Giants fans, oh, it's Giants fans, hands down. Don't get me wrong. They have the history. They have the championships and all that. But they got a dud of a front office right now. There's a lame duck front office, a lame duck head coach, making boneheaded decisions, actively making the team worse each and every week that they wake up and decide to make a decision. Whereas on the Jets, at least they're trying to get better. They just can't get out of their own way from making bad decisions. We'll take another timeout when we come back. More of the glass half full right after this.
Paul Feinbaum. On weekday afternoons after the Rich Eisen Show, 2 to 6 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back into the glass half full. And if you play along with Whamageddon every year where you try to avoid hearing that song, tag, you're out. You just heard it. Sorry, I had to. I had to. It's my little Christmas prank to you. So there you go. You are officially out of Whamageddon. You've heard it. And or is it Whamageddon or is it Whamhalla? It's Whamhalla. It's Whamhalla, like Valhalla. So it's Whamhalla. If you hear the song, it's you kind of like you're out. You try to see who can go the longest into the Christmas season without hearing it. So there you go. If you just heard bumping in there from that commercial break, you're out. So enjoy the rest of the holiday season. You don't have to worry about plugging your ears every time you walk into a department store from now on. So let's go ahead and get back into it now. I want to circle back around to the Florida State game, and we'll get to Lane Kiffin's comments about why he thinks Ole Miss should be in the college football playoff over Alabama, and we'll also talk some Ice Flyers coming up in just a second. But I do want to get to the Ohio State-Michigan game and the Florida State game a little bit more. Because we got news this morning that the Big Ten is fining Ohio State and Michigan for their fight after the game. They're both being fined $100,000. Still no word from the SEC or the ACC if Florida and Florida State are going to get fined for their fight. for literally almost the – actually, not almost, but it was the identical situation where Michigan players, after they beat Ohio State, tried to plant the Michigan flag at midfield on the logo. Florida tried to do the same thing after beating Florida State. Fights ensued. Well, I'll say a fight ensued during Ohio State and Michigan's. Florida was more of a scuffle. Florida State was more of a scuffle than a fight, right? So I don't expect to see a fine for either Florida or Florida State. I don't expect to see players being suspended by their conference or the NCAA for those fights in the Florida State situation. Ohio State and Michigan, however, that is very much a real possibility because there were some serious punches thrown. So there was some seriousness to that one there in the horseshoe, but I think the one in Doe Campbell Stadium a little bit lesser. But my whole thing with this is that it's a rivalry game. You can't be mad when a team wants to do something like this in a rivalry game. Look, if you're playing Toledo and Toledo beat you at home and they try to come plant their flag on the midfield logo, yeah, be upset about it. But expect it in a rivalry game. That's like the one place that you should look at it and go, yep, that's probably where that's going to happen. I understand getting upset about it, and you've got players yelling at coaches and yelling at administrators for Ohio State on the sideline of, they're disrespecting our field. Did you not see the performance you put on Saturday? You disrespected the field before they did. You disrespected all those fans that paid to get into the horseshoe, that paid and sat there and froze their you-know-what off to watch you play. You disrespected them first by the product you put on the field, Ohio State. I'm going to call you out on that right now. No way Michigan should have had any shot at being in that game. No way. Without their top offensive player, without their top defensive player, they're already a bad team, but they were worse in this game on Saturday. They threw the ball for 40 yards in the entire game. 4-0 the entire game. And you lose. How? How? You had everything set up in front of you. Win this game. You get a rematch against Oregon. You could have gone into the college football playoffs as the number one team. But again, here we go. Ryan Day play in Michigan. I don't know what it is. He's like 60-something in like four or 60-something in two or whatever against everybody else in college football. 1-4 against Michigan. Is he scared of the color blue and yellow? Like what is it about Michigan that just makes Ryan Day turn into Coach Klein from The Waterboy? Remember when he got like kind of started having the panic attack in The Waterboy where, you know, what is it, Red Bayou is the opposing, the rival coach, right? Where he's, you know, like he steals his plays and everything. And then like Coach Klein, you know, Henry Winkler, the Fonz is like, what is he doing? Sitting over there on the bench with like the football, just like acting weird because he's having a panic attack. That's Ryan Day against Michigan every single year, every single year. Every time he lines up against the Michigan Wolverines, he just, He can't get it done. And to be mad because they planted the field at flag at midfield, well, guess what? You should have played better at home. You know how they don't do that? If you beat them. This whole, they're disrespecting our field. Okay, and you let them beat you on your field. Don't be surprised when they want to celebrate on the field. They're planting a flag at midfield. They're not setting the stadium on fire. Calm down. Relax. And as far as Florida State, same thing. You were 2-9 heading into that game. Florida, I think the last time Florida beat them was it 2020? It might have been. It's been a couple of years since Florida's beaten Florida State. Yeah, Florida's going to go into this game, and they're going to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, especially after half of this team last year saw you come in there with a backup quarterback into the swamp and beat them and then proceed to cut out chunks of the field and march around with a decapitated gator head. Yeah, they're going to take it a little personal. And the fact that you're 2-9, they're going to smell blood in the water. And they're going to do exactly what gators and sharks do when they smell blood in the water. They're going to attack. That's what they did. They won the game. You, like, just deal with it. It's like watching confetti fall after you lose a championship game. You just got to sit there and take it. You lost the game. You don't want it to happen. Play better. Play better. And to anybody that's upset at Florida players for scuffing up the field there at Doak Campbell Stadium after the game, again, I go back to they had to see you cut out chunks of their field at the Swamp last year. And I understand Florida State has this tradition they do where they win a game on the road, they cut out a chunk of the field for their sod cemetery. I get it. But to an 18, 19-year-old kid who is a high-level competitor, they don't see a tradition. They don't see a sod cemetery. They see players from the other team ripping up their home field. So you know what they're going to do when they come to your home field and they beat you? They're going to give you a dose of your own medicine. Should have saw it coming all week long. Lots of Florida players on social media were using the phrase, touch grass. Florida was planning on doing some damage to that grass after they won that game. Because those players had to see it happen on their field last year, so they wanted to return the favor this year. Stop trying to fight. You lost the game. Let the flag be planted. You don't like it. It ticks you off. Use that. Go into their stadium next year and do it right back to them. It's only fair, and it makes the rivalries so much better. So much better. It's the Glass Half Full, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to give us a call, be a part of today's show, or you can text in as well, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Lane Kiffin posted a fun little graphic on social media trying to plead the case for Ole Miss to get into the college football playoffs. Just kind of give you a landscape of what this says. It's basically running down that there are three teams in the SEC that are 9-3, Ole Miss, Alabama, and South Carolina. Points out that South Carolina lost to both Alabama and Ole Miss, so they should not be in. They should be out. Also pointed out that Ole Miss has won nine wins, outscoring their opponents 390-94. Alabama has outscored their opponents in their nine wins 371-119. So saying, I guess, their point differential, Ole Miss is better. In the three losses that Ole Miss has, they were outscored 73-60. In the three losses Alabama has, they were outscored 88-55. Common opponents for those two teams, both beat Georgia. Ole Miss won by 18, Alabama won by 7. Both beat South Carolina. Ole Miss won by 24, Bama won by 2. And then Alabama beat LSU by 29. Ole Miss lost to LSU by 3 in overtime. Ole Miss beat Oklahoma by 12, where Alabama lost to Oklahoma by 21. And he goes on to wrap it up by saying, clearly Ole Miss is better than Alabama, and that is why the Ole Miss Rebels, Land Sharks, whatever they are, deserve to be in the college football playoffs as a 9-3 team over Alabama as a 9-3 team. I understand where Lane is coming from with this, but my response to this is, bro, come on, it's Alabama. Do you really think that they are going to put Ole Miss in the college football playoff over Alabama? You're talking Bear Bryant, Gene Stallings, Joe Namath, Nick Saban, all the history and tradition of Alabama compared to what? Archie Manning and the Grove? Eli Manning and the Grove? Come on, man. You know Ole Miss isn't getting in. It's going to be Bama. If a 9-3 team gets in, it's going to be Bama. Nice try, Lane. We'll take our final timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. We'll have your headline roundup. We'll talk a little Ice Flyers. And we'll look ahead to tonight's Monday Night Football matchup.
Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night. 3-18! This is your home for every primetime NFL game. ESPN Pensacola.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Let your heart.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Getting you in the holiday spirit as it is officially now December. So I'm all good with Christmas decorations and Christmas music. We've carved the turkey. We've ate the leftovers. We can move on now to Christmas. And I do love some Christmas music. So you're going to hear Christmas music as bumper music, as intro music coming in from the breaks throughout the month. We'll probably get a little heavier into it as we get closer to Christmas, but definitely expect some Christmas music on the way. Real quick, before we get to your headline roundup, want to talk about the Ice Flyers. Big weekend for them. They had three games over the Thanksgiving weekend. They played Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Then they played on Friday and Saturday. Went 2-1 in those three games, and that was desperately needed for this team. It was just a big win for them, but still some things to work on. This was Coach Graham after the game on Saturday night.
I mean, consistency is the key. I mean, I think you can, you know, if you can start putting together back-to-back periods, you know, that's the whole thing for us. Consistency through three periods. So, again, that's the disappointing thing about tonight. And I shouldn't even have anything to be disappointed about because we won on home ice. But, again, it's that third period should have never went the way it went if we do what we're supposed to do. So, and that's just consistency. You know, we have a lot of younger guys right now in our lineup. Yeah, we made some mistakes. They made us pay. But again, we got enough goal support tonight to get us to overtime, and this is what you need. I mean, I thought Kev was the game changer tonight. He was the reason that we were able to get that extra point because he made the saves that we need him to.
Yeah, talking about Kevin Risop, the goalie there, number 30, 32 saves on the 35 shots that came his way. Was definitely a phenomenal performance by him. Cameron Cook had a great performance on his birthday, and several other great Ice Flyer players stepped up, including Ivan Bondarenko, there in the overtime and shootout periods for the Ice Flyers. So big wins for them. Hopefully it's kind of a turning point moving in the right direction. Coach Graham kind of talked also about after the game. They got seven guys that are normal staples of their rotations that are just not on, they're not available right now. So you don't have those guys in your lines, whether it's your first line or your second line, whatever it may be. You don't have those guys. You've got to find ways to replace those guys and fill the gaps. He feels like they've done a nice job, especially of the last week or so, of doing that. And, yeah, I mean, look, if the last three games you're playing teams that are kind of middle of the pack to the top of the league there in the SPHL, tough loss to Huntsville, who's right there at the top. It was 3-2, though. Right there in that game, had chances to where they could have won that game, but they're close. They just need to kind of put everything together. Once they do, it could turn into a pretty fun season for the Ice Flyers. They are in last place right now in the SPHL, but it's just December. It's the beginning of December. There are a lot of hockey games and a lot of hockey left to play, right? So if you look at it for the Ice Flyers, kind of where they were last year to where they ended up, lots of things can change between December in April. So we will see what can happen. Steps in the right direction happening, though, for your Pensacola Ice Flyers. Let's move now to your headline roundup, where we take a look at the best headlines in the world of sports right here on the Glass Half Full in ESPN Pensacola. Started out with 49ers running back Christian McCaffrey suffers potential season-ending injury to his knee. I don't know all the names of the ligaments, but I believe it's the PCL. There's a lot of CL ligaments in the knee. I believe it was the PCL that he damaged, so that could be potential season injury for him. Really just has not been his year. Had that that tendonitis of the Achilles throughout most of the first half of the season that really was an issue for him. Buffalo Bills, they clinched AFC East Division Championships with their big win over the 49ers last night. Mike Tomlin tells George Pickens he needs to grow up following the flags in Sunday's game against the Bengals. Jets tepid on Aaron Rodgers' starting status following the Jets' third straight loss. They are 3-9 on the season. Michigan and Ohio State both fined $100,000 by the Big Ten following their fight on Saturday. Trevor Lawrence carted off the field with a concussion in the loss against the Texans yesterday. And Victor Wembanyama, Wimby, has his third career triple-double for the Spurs in their win over the Kings. It's the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Closing it out, last couple of minutes of today's show. Want to take a look at the Monday Night Football game we have tonight between the Cleveland Browns and the Denver Broncos. I believe the Broncos are favored by right around a touchdown. I think it's like 6.5 points is the exact line. But this is definitely going to be a very interesting ball game. I got burned by Cleveland, last week when they played, or the week before when they played on Thursday night. I said that, Pittsburgh's the better team. Cleveland just doesn't have enough. and Nick Chubb single-handedly shut me up on that. So, I think Cleveland can keep this close. I think a couple of things to keep an eye on is the altitude. Does that have an effect? Does that kind of wear them down over the course of the game? You know, constantly having to deal with being out of breath and things like that. Does that wear them down over the course of a game? Can Nick Chubb run for the yardage that he did against the Steelers a couple of weeks ago on Thursday night? Can he do that same type of performance against the Broncos in that altitude tonight? Also, Jerry Jeudy going back to Denver to face off against his old team. Patrick Surtain said, it's going to be fun. I think it is going to be fun. I think it's going to be a pretty good game. I'm going to go with the Broncos at home tonight, though. Close. Real close. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, stay tuned. Greeny coming up next.